Okay. I think I'm actually on. Glad he sat down back there. I was trying to do both. I was trying to work the audio over there and get ready as well. Okay. In our class tonight, we're going to continue the story of the flood. What's the last story that we've been talking about in here? By the way, I do a lot by question. What was the last story we talked about in here? The story, the sin of Cain, the story of Cain and Abel, and Cain's sin. Okay. As we've been going through this class, one of the purposes of this class is to go back to the cherished stories of the Bible, the stories that we know very, very well. But this time that we're kind of going back through it with an extra eye. We're going back through it with an eye looking to the lessons that are there for our learning. Now with this also comes a danger. What could a danger be to looking back for lessons, going back through these stories, going a little bit slower, and trying to pay attention to the lessons that we might could learn from it? Miss the overall point. Excellent. Can anyone tell me some examples of some really, for lack of a better term, silly lessons that you've heard taught from the story of the flood that we're going to be talking about tonight? What's that now? Exactly. That's exactly right on. What else? The point he made was in the story of the sharing of the five, or the feeding of the 5,000. The point is made over and over of the little boy who shared his food. What are some other things that you've seen done? Have you ever seen the story of the flood used to teach? I'm sad to say I have personally. Teach, be kind to your pets. Yeah, it sounds silly. So we can't go in looking at these stories to see maybe there's some point we want to make and then go in to look to these stories to find a scripture to go with the point we want to make. We need to go into these stories, look at them, and there really are some awesome lessons to be learned, and there's some in the first few verses of chapter 6 that we're going to spend some time on tonight. But in doing so, we have to be careful. Okay, at the end when we were studying last time, adjust the volume down just a hair here. At the end of our study last time, what was the condition of the people at the end of Cain and Abel? Was everybody wicked? Who was our characters? How many characters really did we have in the Bible story at that time? You had Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. Cain has killed Abel. And that was really just about it. Now, would you consider it to be a wicked place, a wicked world at that time? Cain had sinned. Yeah, his sin was wicked. Adam and Eve, they had sinned. But not wickedness. In Genesis chapter 6, what is the condition of the people? They're wicked. God says, I'm going to judge them. We know the story well. God says, I'm going to judge these people for their wickedness. So one of the questions I have is, how do we get from the people and the condition of the people in Genesis chapter 3 to their condition now? How did this happen? So let's take a second. I know we're not trying to link all these stories together, but can someone tell me what separated Cain and Abel's sacrifice? They went back to the sin, but what separated their sacrifice? What was it that was wrong with Cain's? Exactly. What did you start to say, Freddie? It wasn't done by faith. We don't know what the details was. He offered of his flock. Abel offered of the first fruits of his... But one was done by faith, and the other one wasn't. And we don't necessarily learn that in Genesis. We learn that in Hebrews. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4, by faith Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained a witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gift, and through it, he being dead, still speaks. So, we had this separation, we had the beginning of the sin. Then, we can actually see the generations. If we add these numbers together, if you go back to Genesis chapter 5, that gives you the chronology, not really the chronology, but the heritage from Adam to Noah. And if you'll notice over here in this column, what you have here is how long they lived is the first column. So Adam lived 930 years. But the second column is how old he was when he had the child that was mentioned. So when Adam had Seth, he was 130 years old. When Seth had Enos, he was 105 years old. And so on and so forth. And that very end column over there is just basically the addition of those numbers. Now, I do that to say, if the generations here are complete, that we've basically gone at least about 1,500 years. Jeff Hughes says 1,656. This is 1,556. And when I say if the generations are complete, basically I mean we don't know that we have all of the father sons listed here. So we know we're at least 1,500 years that's passed between that time of Cain up until now, when we're beginning the story of the flood. Now, when we ask the question, was everyone wicked? One of the points I wanted to build up to is, if you look in chapter 4 and verse 25, you'll see a statement here about Seth. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and named him Seth. For God has appointed another seed to me instead of Abel, whom God killed. And as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enos. And the men began to call the name of the Lord. That is not, to me, that does not sound like a wicked people. It is here with Seth and then Enos that we see that they began to call on the name of the Lord. Also, what do we know about Enoch? He walked with God. And another thing I find interesting is that it said, that's in Genesis chapter 5 and verse 24, that Enoch walked with God. And as far as I know, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, the only other person that I know of that was said about was about Noah. In chapter 6 and verse 24, it was also said that Noah, you know, the statement that he walked with God. So, when we come on the scene, and yes, we do have in Genesis chapter 6, we do have a very wicked world. But in the midst of that very wicked world, we also have good influences that are still there. We have at least a lineage here. Now, we don't know about everyone. We don't have a lot of things told us about Canaan, or Mahalalel, or Methuselah, or Lamech. They may have been righteous, they may not have been righteous. But we do have some hints in here about certain men that were righteous during this period of time. There's also something we can glean from Hebrews chapter, what we all know as the faith chapter. Hebrews, the 11th chapter, verses 5 and 6. By faith, Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death, and was found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must be a believer that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. Can you see how the point's made that faith predates, you know, faith goes all the way back. And it was faith that these men had. And that's going to come into play here in just a minute with Noah. Noah had this same kind of faith. But here are some men during that period of time that the point is well made was righteous. So let's go back to our question, you know, what separated Cain and Abel's sacrifices. We talked about through Seth's line and through Adam's line, there was more righteous men that came through. But how did Cain respond? First, we know that he lacked the faith that was needed. That was the first statement that was made, that whatever it was about his sacrifice. It lacked that needed faith. How did he respond? He murdered his brother. And from there, he had two curses that we know of. One was, he's going to be cursed from what? The ground wasn't going to continue to produce. And that he was going to live what kind of life? A nomadic life. He's going to move around. He's not going to be able to settle down. Now, we can also see from his lineage. Once again, we're covering that 1,500 years, that 1,500 years, or 1,600 years between Adam and the story of the flood. Cain's family continued to go. And we have a few things, we have a few notes about him as well. He has his son, Enoch, which They built a city, and Enoch was the name of that city. We don't really have any information about Irid or the others here until we get to Lamech. And Lamech had three sons by two wives. One, Jabal, who was said was the father of those who dwelt in tents, that nomadic lifestyle. He was the father of those who dwelt in tents. Jubal, that was the father of the ones who played the harp or the flute, the father of the musicians. And Tubal-Cain, which was the one, he was the instructor. He taught people how to work with bronze, how to work with silver. So these were intelligent people all the way back. They were able to build things. They were able to. They played the instruments, and they provided. But there's a statement here about Lamech that I find very interesting there at the end, and then we're going to jump into our story tonight. Lamech said something to his wives. Now, what was Cain scared of when he got when God told him of his curses? He was scared that other people were going to do what to him? Going to kill him. And then God said that, well, no, he put a mark on him and said, they won't kill you. But Lamech goes on, and obviously this had been passed down. Lamech said to his wives, hear my voice, wives of Lamech, listen to my speech. For I have killed a man who wounded me, even a young man for hurting me. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, then Lamech shall be avenged seventyfold. How does this make the descendants of Cain sound? You see a stark contrast? We have, maybe not all, but at least some righteous coming down through the lineage of Cain, or through Abel and Seth. Sorry, not Abel, but Seth. And we obviously have wickedness, worldliness, coming down through the lineage of Cain. Once again, maybe not all, but at least we have some hints into some. So now, beginning in chapter 6, in verse 1, men begin to multiply. We went from just a few Bible characters to hundreds of thousands to maybe millions. We don't know how many people was on the earth at this time. But in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 1, it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them. So things are happening, people are continuing to go. And it goes on to say, sons of God began to look on the daughters of men. Now there's been a lot of controversy, and that's one of the questions that Jeff asked. What are some of the things that you've heard the sons of God referred to? What did you have for that question? That's right. What Daniel said was that some of these that came down, he does not believe this. He was repeating that there are many that would say that angels came down, coming down from what Job. There's a passage in Job that says it starts calling angels by the sons of God. But, so we do have some that says it's angels, but that doesn't fit the passage here. We don't have time to go into all the details. That doesn't fit the passage here. What are some other things that we've heard that would be these sons of God? What are some things that you're thinking about would be the sons of God? Righteous men. I'm going to go ahead and put both of the next points on. Some say it's the sons of Seth. And some say that it's righteous men. I kind of say those are both pretty much one and the same thing. That it is these people that have, and I think this is the right answer here, it is these righteous, whether it be the Seth, the Enos, the Enoch, the Noah, those righteous men that we've heard come down through. Now then, with that said, who would be these daughters of men? The men of unrighteousness. Once again, whether it's the descendants of Cain, I'm not trying to draw a line there. There is, you know, there are some that would definitely teach that, and there's evidence there. We've actually built somewhat of a case for that. But you have the ones of righteousness, and then these daughters of men, the ones of unrighteousness. Now, the next point that's made is these sons of God took wives from the daughters of men. How did they make their choice? Looks. You know, how did they choose which wife they wanted to take? They did it based on looks. Now, how might should they have? Were they were righteous or not? Do we have any cases? I mean, is there any examples that jump off at you of times? Yeah. That's right. Said, don't go out and choose a wife for my son from here. Go back to my family. Go back to them and get for my son a wife for my son there. So that somewhat, well, we're going to come back. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. What was the result of their having done this? What was coming? More wickedness. Yep, that's the result. And what was God going to do about that? He's going to wipe them out in verse 3. My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he indeed is flesh, and yet his days shall be 120 years. We're going to talk a little bit more about that verse in a minute. But judgment's coming. Judgment's coming because of this. But I think this brings a very important point for us to think about. And I don't think we're stretching this passage to take a second here and to talk about some dangers. The dangers of intermarriage. If you was to flip over to Deuteronomy chapter 7, what does God say there about marriage? What has just happened, I guess, first? What's the context of Deuteronomy 7, somebody? Or what was the context of this point? It hasn't happened yet. They're going to go in, they're going to conquest, they're going to take the land, and when they conquest the land, what do you not do? You said, don't take them as wives. Don't look on the women that you're going in to take as wives. Now, what was the point? Why not? What would they do? They would turn you away from God. And I think some very valid points for us. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. Do not be deceived. Evil companions do what? Corrupt good morals. And probably even more striking is 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 14. Once again, they're not necessarily just marriage, but don't be what? So, what kind of close relationship should we carry on with these unrighteous people? Marriage being the ultimate of that. What are some dangers? Now, first, let me ask, has anyone ever seen a case where someone of the world married turned out good in the end? I know cases. Or dated, at least dated. You know, got close to, was good friends with. You know, I'm a product of that. Not marriage, but Cheryl and I was very, very close. And through her, I got to very good influences in Gary and others who taught me the truth. Now, there's a few people that raised their hands to that question. I saw three or four go up. How many people know the opposite of that? How many know people that there was someone who was a strong or a Christian who had been taught the truth, had obeyed the gospel, and then they got in a relationship with someone who was not a Christian, who was of the world, who was evil, even, and saw the unrighteous pull the righteous down? Anybody know those situations? You know, not as many hands as going up as I would expect, because I think we probably all know, we may all know both. But there are also many of both situations. Questions or comments from you guys? And we'll go on to a couple more parting comments there. Anything else? Did it get Solomon in trouble? What happened to Solomon? What was he drawn away by? That's right. All of the wives of all these other gods, instead of getting them to take on the true God Jehovah, he took on the many gods. And what about even Israel? What about when they came back out of captivity? What was one of the first things they had to do? Wow, everybody, this is Wednesday night. Everybody's supposed to be awake on Wednesday nights. You know, you teach kids on Wednesday nights and they've been in school all day. They're hyper on Wednesday nights. What did you start to say, Freddie? They had idols they had to get rid of. They were also instructed, you know, they had taken wives while they were there. The point here, and whether it's intermarriage or whether it's just our friendships with the world, We have to be careful. We see, we already know, looking from the back, from the end of this discussion forward, what was, we're going to talk about the giants, or the I have a hard time with that word. We'll call it the tyrants or the giants. Yeah. We already know what the outcome, you know, that these were the outcomes of that. So it didn't turn out good for them. And 9 times out of 10, I think the good thing for us to note, 9 times out of 10, that, you know, no, I'm not saying anything about not going into the world to teach. I'm not saying anything about not going and being a good influence on those that are of the world. I think we can all safely say we're all here very happy someone from within Christ was a good influence on us. But that close, intimate relationship where their best friends, marriage even more, where they're influencing you and you're influencing them. But many times, the wicked is what will win out. So in this case, what was the result? Freddie's already mentioned it a little bit earlier, but verse 4. What was the results of this? The Nephilim, the giants, the tyrants, the vicious, the mighty, whatever word you might want to use for, and by mighty here or giants, it's not necessarily, from everything I can read and from everything I can study, it's not necessarily giants in stature, like Goliath when David went up against him. It's a different word that's used for giant here than there. It's kind of like a lot of words we have. We may use the word for a variety of things. Well, this Nephilim was not necessarily, it could mean that, but it was not necessarily that. This would be, I think even some translations, does anybody have a translation that translates this word as tyrant? I know, I think there are those out there that would translate it as tyrant versus that of giant. But either way, these tyrants, these giants, these vicious, vicious people, they become renowned. It was said they were renowned to the world. How do you think they were renowned? In what way? By reputation? Yeah, by reputation they were renowned. They were, you know, the biggest, the strongest, the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. And these were. There were, if I read verse 4 right, there were some that they were there before, these giants that were there before on the earth. But then also afterwards, even as a continuation of this, when the sons of God came in to these daughters of men, they bore children to them. And those were the mighty ones of old, the men of renown. And then right after this, God says, He sees what? The great wickedness of mankind, or of men. Their wickedness was so great on the earth that ever intent of the heart was what? Evil. I mean, that's, to me, that's pretty powerful. That all of their thoughts, everything that they were about, everything that they were doing, was evilness. So, would you say that these sons of God, the good influences, which way did the influence go by this point? Obviously, the bad has influenced the good in this case. The bad has influenced the good. And to the point that God is completely grieved that He has made these people. And what does He want to do? He's going to destroy them. Yeah, I'm grieved that I've made them. And I'm just going to wipe them out. And then we're going to I actually intentionally described and skipped verse 3. And then we're going to look at 3, and then we're going to look at 6 and 7. Verse 3, Genesis chapter 6 and verse 3. And my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he indeed is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. And then skip down to verse 6, a few after this had happened. And the Lord was sorry that He had made the earth, and He was grieved in His heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy a man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry I have made them. Wow. Just 1,500 years after He had created. at the end of every day of creation, how did God end each day? It's morning and evening, and it was good. Now, 1,500, 1,600, 1,700 years later, it's not good anymore. He is grieved that He's done it. Now, what does He mean in verse 7? In verse 3. First, let's go with both phrases that are there. My spirit shall not strive with man forever. What's that saying? That's right. There's a time. I'm not going to strive with them forever. I'm not going to, that word strive could mean abide. I'm not going to abide with them. I'm not going to be with them forever. Why? They're sin. They're fleshly. And then, and we could go, probably won't for time's sake, we could go to the New Testament, to some of the writings of Paul, where what's at war between the Spirit of God and the flesh? Aren't they at war? You know, the flesh, the lust of the flesh are at war with the Spirit. And I think this is, you can see it playing out here. But what is this 120 days? Is that how long? How long for what? What is this 120 days? How long these particular men are going to live? Years. Just a little bit of difference there. 120 years. I apologize. What is this? This is how long until this judgment is going to come. And we know that Noah was how old when the flood started? 600 years. So we can now, with this 120, we can just about date this back to 480. He was about 480 years old, which is mind-boggling to me and probably to all of you. He was about 480 years old when this was going on. Okay, the next thing he said, and we talked about this as well, I will destroy man that I have created from the face of the earth, for I am sorry that I have made them. So did this wickedness have a price? Yes, the wickedness had a price. But one of the things I find amazing, and this is another lesson I think we can draw out of this, is what came with this judgment? 120 years. What would you consider that? Isn't there a little mercy in that? Isn't there a chance, an opportunity to change things for some repentance here? But in the fourth generation, but in the fourth generation, where is this quote from? That's the next question. Verse 6. But in the fourth generation they shall return here, for the iniquities of the Amorites are not yet full. What is that quoting from? Genesis what? Chapter 15, he's telling Abraham, this is the land I'm going to give you, but I'm not going to give it to you now. Why? Because the iniquities of the Amorites are not yet full. Once again, that little bit of, you know, there's that sense that there's time for this all to come about. And we learn some things about Noah. First, there in verse 8, right after everything is wicked, he's sorry that he's made everything, what does God notice? There's Noah. And what did Noah do? He found favor in God's sight. Now, if you wouldn't mind, Freddie, read 9 through 12 for me. Okay. Now, I have almost a scary question. What if Noah had not found favor in God's eyes? He would have been destroyed too. Kind of a scary thought. But there's Noah. There's salvation for all, really, through Noah. But first we have here that Noah was a just man. He was perfect in his generation, or he was blameless in his generation. And then if you actually go, he walked with God, and we made the point earlier that, as far as I know, this statement that he walked with God is made both of him and Enoch, and the only ones that I know of there. And then what is it we learn from 2 Peter about him? What was he doing during these 120 years? He was preaching. And I kind of tie this back into that mercy. How does this combine with mercy? Giving him a chance. 120 years that he is preaching righteousness according to 2 Peter. He's living righteously and he's preaching righteously. And I think I have... Maybe I didn't. Let me turn over there. The point is made in... And I can't remember if it's 2 Peter or 1 Peter. That's why I'm having to flip over for just a moment. It is 2 Peter, chapter 3. Well, I promise I did study. Maybe it was back in 319. That basically, well, the point is, so that I don't spend too much time here looking for it, that through, what else was Noah doing? When he was preaching to them righteousness and they were rejecting it, was he not also in some ways judging them by laying out before them what they should be doing? What it has to be, but anyway, I'm not going to continue to take extra time away from that. But during these 120 years, where we have in verse 3, and then also in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 19, God is waiting patiently, giving these people a chance. But yet, does His message fall on anyone's ears? Not that we know of. They were corrupt, as Freddie read, in verse 11 and 12, back in Genesis chapter 6. They were corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, all earth, and it was corrupt. So not just corrupt, just not, but this whole concept of violence, going hand in hand with, it was evil that was on their mind continually. So God said to Noah, do what? Make an ark. And he waited, unless I'm missing something, this is what he's waiting 120 years for. You know, giving Noah time. He's preaching, yes, but he's also giving him time to build this ark. Now, we have some facts, and let's go through a few facts here about the ark. We're told that it's to be 450 feet long. We know feet more than we do cubits, so if you don't mind, I'll use feet. 45 feet high. A foot's about a cubit and a half. 45 foot high. And then 75 foot wide. And it was to have three decks. Now, if you think about this room's about, is that about 35 feet? Those are 8 foot sheets. Okay. So, 27, you know, 1.5 times the pit of the room for height. Do you happen to know how long the room is, Freddie? 90 feet. So, four of these rooms, 4 foot, 4.5 football fields long, by 1.5 of these rooms tall, by 75 foot wide. And it was to have three decks, three floors. Each floor was to have the stalls and the cubes. What were those for? What was the purpose for them? For the animals, for the stocks, for the food that was going to last. The cubit, the roof was to be a cubit above, and there was a door to be in the middle. And he says in verse 17, he tells him to go build this ark, and he says in verse 17, And behold, I myself am bringing the floodwaters on the earth to destroy from under the heavens all the flesh which is the breath of life, and everything which is on the earth shall die. So God comes and He tells Noah, this is what I want you to do. To build it a gopher wood. These are the dimensions. This is how wide. This is how tall. This is how long. Here's where I want the door to be. Here's how I want the roof to be. And even a window. In the specific spot where God wants the window. Now, with that said, Do you think God cared about the details? If God didn't care about the details, what would He have told Noah to do? Build an ark. Yeah. Go build an ark. But obviously, and I think one of the points that we cannot read the story and not get from it, is God did care about the details. To the detail of what was done. And I'm skipping ahead of myself a little bit, but what's the one, the very last verse, I think it's 25, chapter 6, and verse 22, I'm sorry. What did Noah do? That's right. He, according to all that God has commanded, Noah did. So he did. So God cared about the details. Exactly. So that everybody heard that. That this also says a little bit of something about the fact that Noah paid close attention to what God had to say to him. He was there. Not only did he hear, physically hear what he had to say, but he heard it. He heard it and he did it. Now, in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7, I think it is, we see that by faith, Noah. What was it that faith, what part did faith have in all this? Build this monstrosity. How foolish would it have been at the end if that flood would have never come? I mean, he waited 120 years for this to happen. How foolish would it have been? The enormity of the actual vessel that had been built. The time that was put into it. Think about what all Noah, time, materials, the food that was to be gathered and stored and prepared, the trees that was to be cut down, the nailing, the covering it with pitch within and without, the amount of work. Did he have to have pretty strong faith? Yeah. That was a lot of work. For him not to truly believe that God was going to bring these promises about. Because I think we can say it was something they had never seen before. So what are some lessons that we can learn from this, quickly? Follow God's commands. That's what you said, okay. Do things as God's way. Exactly. If He cared enough to tell us how to do it, we better care enough to do it the way He said. There are so many that would say, God doesn't care about the details. He just wants us to love Him. He just wants us to serve Him. He doesn't care how we do it. I dare say, this kind of tells me that, yeah, I think He did care. He cared about the details. To the length, to the height. And once again, we ask the question, would Noah have been obeying if he had made it from poplar instead of oak? I don't know what wood would have been available there, but I made poplar. Could he use poplar wood instead of gopher? Instead of oak, sorry. Instead of gopher wood? No. He simply would not have been obeying the command. And we've talked about the lessons that we can learn from this, but Colossians chapter 3 and verse 16 and 17, whatever you do in word or deed, do how? In the name of the Lord. And when I say in the name of the Lord, what are we saying? What do we mean? By His authority. If He cares enough to tell us how, we better care enough to listen to how He said. Just like Noah listened to how they said, to listen to how He said to do it, and do it. And then the point we've already kind of made is by faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which He condemned the world. And I said that, and that was actually the statement I was looking for earlier, and it's in Hebrews instead of 1 Peter. That by building this, how did He judge the world? How did He condemn the world? What's meant there that He condemned the world? Yes, He gave them a choice. He put it there before them. He gave them a choice. He was a preacher of righteousness, and they chose another way out. And is first bell rang? Okay, we're close. I've got a minute away. So let's talk just a little bit. We might can actually finish up chapter 6 here. Picking up in verse 18. But I will establish my covenant with you And you shall go in to the ark, you and your sons and your wives and your sons' wives with you. And every living thing of all the flesh you shall bring, two of every kind, into the ark. Keep them alive with you, and they shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, of the animals after their kind, of every creeping thing which is on the earth and after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. And you shall take for yourselves all of the food that is eaten, and you shall gather it to yourselves, and it shall be for food for you and for them. Okay. So with this, God saved creation. What he had he just said he was going to do? I'm going to destroy it. It was good in creation. Now it's wickedness. I'm sorry, I'm grieved that I've even made this world. And I'm going to destroy it. And I'm going to wipe it out. But he saw that one man, Noah, the righteous man, found favor in his eyes. And because of that, God saves. He makes this covenant with him. And he saves the world. And he saves his creation. Okay. A few points that are there. First, we see that there's these eight souls in 1 Peter that in 2 Peter that we read about. Through water, eight souls were saved. Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their wives. He saved their souls. And he was also to save two of every kind, of every creature that was to be saved, so that you may keep them alive, so they may continue. And he says, take for yourselves. And think about the amount of food that they had to take on board for themselves, to keep themselves alive, and to keep the animals alive. So there was an amazing amount of food that had to be taken on. And it was said that, did he have to go out and round those animals up? I think it was verse 19. What did he say would happen? Did not say that they would come to him. They'll come to you. But once again, he saved the mankind, and he saved the animals, and he did all. I can't think we can end with anything better. He did all according to all that God had commanded. Noah did according to what God had commanded him. We've got about two or three more minutes for the next bell rings. Anybody got any closing comments or questions that we didn't cover? All right. As far as I know, Jeff should be back. Lord willing, he'll be back Sunday morning. Thank you for your attention.